Welcome to another episode of The Gateway. My name is Russ, and as always, I am joined by my co-hosts Amin and Biagio. For this episode, The Gateway is excited to welcome Ashley Bartelt. Ashley is the program director of the HASC Writing Center at Northern Illinois University. With a background in nonprofit administration, retail, and higher education, she has spent over a decade supporting students, faculty, and staff with their academic and professional writing. As part of her current role, she explores how generative AI can be a powerful tool for streamlining writing processes while emphasizing the critical skills of assessing and refining AI-generated work to ensure accuracy, quality, and effectiveness.
Ashley, welcome to The Gateway. It's such a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
Oh, good, because we are too. We're always excited to talk with people that are using AI, working with AI, on the cutting edge of AI. But before we get into all of that stuff, can you tell us just how did you get to where you are?
Oh, my goodness. So without giving away the life story, I spent a bit of time in higher education. I've taught first-year writing courses. I've worked now here at NIU for over a decade at the Writing Center, so writing is the strongest background I've got. I also spent some time out in non-higher education, so I worked for a not-for-profit for 5 years. I ran a vernacular art environment and did grant writing and those sorts of things in a rural space. And then I was in retail for a while as well. I worked at a Calvin Klein and Tommy Hilfiger, so in the PVH line, and that's where the wardrobe that none of you can see that I'm currently wearing came from. So I used that before I came back into administration, which I've been directing the Writing Center for the past 2 years or so.
Wow. So as you're, I want to start with more of the basics and then we'll kind of get into the fun technology stuff. So as someone who went into higher ed teaching, you know, most people think of it like, oh, you're a teacher, you're a professor, you do all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Now you have a completely different job, you're doing something. Can you kind of explain that transition, what that was like for you? And I don't know, is it positive, negative, all of those things?
Entirely positive for me. I was entirely sure when I graduated high school that I was going to be a teacher. And I would still argue that I am, just not in the traditional sense. I enjoy things like project management quite a bit. So when I'm doing programming, I enjoy the logistics of putting everything together and reaching out to stakeholders and lovingly getting them to fall in line with what I need them to do at which point I need them to do it. And so even when I was teaching, I was sort of leveraging those types of things and getting in guest speakers. And then through a confluence of circumstances, I wasn't offered a teaching position, but the Writing Center opportunity popped up. And it's as if the fates told me, this is where you need to go. Because I started recognizing that you can still do a lot of that engagement, either on a one-on-one basis, or you can build something that you can deliver en masse to different student groups across campus and then tailor it to what they're after. Like first year writing, no one wants to talk about writing. I mean, at all, right? It's no one's happy first place. Not even mine. I don't really enjoy it. And I run the Writing Center, which is the greatest irony of my job. But I do like helping people with their writing. Like I'm a very good copy editor. Or being able to walk through and seeing that light bulb when they figure it out. One of my clients now calls it like it's a puzzle that we're doing every day and we're finding where the pieces in the puzzle fit together. And she is less afraid of what she's doing than usual.
Wow. Okay. So when you graduated and you were stepping forward into all of these ideas of what your life could be. Mm-hmm. Did artificial intelligence writing papers for you come up in your mind in even fathomability, if that was a word? I don't know. Sorry.
It is.
Yes. Thank you. This is great. I love it. But like, was that even something you could see on the horizon at that time? And how is that affecting where you're at today, what you're doing?
Vaguely. So we're not talking about how old I am, so how long ago that was. But we did always have conversations about AI, like Maslow's things are well in sort of pop culture. And so those had always been around. Mm-hmm. And if you think about AI and where it's popped up and in what ways, think about bots that you find online when you get to a mm-hmm. website and that little annoying chat pops up in the corner. And that's been around for ages, mm-hmm. which is a version of AI.
Right.
We've also had a lot of programming that creates things for us, which not the sort of independent thinking AI, but if we're talking about systems that are designed very strategically to give the impression that you are engaging with something that is responding back to you in real time, I would argue that, yeah, I did see something like that coming.
Okay. Okay. So then more on to like what's happening now when you're working with students and someone comes in and says, hey, my professor is wanting me to write this paper and I'm just going to toss this in and I am going to get a result and they probably won't know it. How do you handle that?
Oh, first question is what department they're in and who their instructor is and how their instructor has talked about AI. NIU doesn't have an official overarching policy because how different disciplines and careers and departments are handling it is so varied. And so nothing they could put forward would be particularly comprehensive or even actionable. And so in lieu of that, we're defaulting to things like departments or faculty members who are making the determination in any given academic context, what's permissible. So we need to ask student first, have you talked about AI in your course? What are you allowed to use it for and in what ways?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Once we have that grounding, it gives us information about how we can move forward with the appointment. But we do have to rely on the student from their perspective. It's a bit of audience sort of interpretation. Think about students sitting in a class and you tell them something and they don't all ace the exam. Mm-hmm. It's because everyone hears the same thing differently. And so we're always playing a little bit of sort of translation when a student says, this is what's going on in class. The same sort of thing is occurring with AI right now.
So I'm curious about, going off of that, I'm curious about your philosophy. Now, it seems like what I'm getting is you're not saying to the student, no, you have to write it yourself. Your philosophy is, it's a tool. Are you allowed to use it or not? If you're allowed to use it, let's see how it best serves you.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Some of the best stuff I've used with AI, and this might be jumping ahead a smidge, I was at a really good learning center conference a year and a half ago, and I saw a really good presentation on AI. And it was by a joint learning center, writing center piece, and then the library. And their point was not to ask it to write a paper for you. It was to think about how complex the task of writing a research paper is and all of the different stages you would go through. And then how many steps within each stage you would encounter. And they were designing a loose rubric for sort of demonstration purposes that evaluated how effective AI, human AI combination, or just human, were at each of those different microtasks, trying to start isolating where and how AI in the writing and research process can be effective and where there's so much human intervention that's needed that it's more trouble than it's worth. And around that is the larger conversation of how much writing knowledge do you have to have in order to be able to tell an AI what to do? So you need to be able to write your prompt. So prompt engineering requires writing. Mm. And how effectively can you evaluate it, what it's produced?
Yeah.
And how quickly? And how much talent or writing skill do you need in order to be able to do that?
Well, Ashley, are you saying that AI makes mistakes when it's writes? Like, because I just put it in and then... But like, truly, I think some people don't think of that, that they're like, I put in my thing, I got my response, I'm good to go.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Magic pills. I am never a fan of something that appears too good to be true. And in that respect, I would argue, yes. Mm. I can give many examples of ways that I can game it. Perhaps the best analogy or metaphor I've got, depending on what generation you are, may or may not work, which is that it's a bit like a new Wikipedia. You can go to it when you're watching a movie to get base knowledge about a topic, but you don't generally trust it wholesale because you know at some point there's going to be flaws in it. Mm-hmm. So you use it for very specific things. We're starting to see AI be reasonably good at helping students early in connecting to a topic or introductory levels. But when you get to junior, senior level work where you're supposed to be gaining expertise, or if you are in graduate school or a faculty member who's mm-hmm. doing research, it might not be able, at least for the moment, to get up to that level of detail that is asked of someone who's in a position like that.
And I'll turn this over to our co-host, but I hear a lot right now, especially in the AI space, of companies and tools marketing this idea of a PhD level AI. That is the jargon that I'm, this is a PhD level agent and algorithm, whatever it is. From your just day-to-day experiences working with students doing higher education learning, do you have an idea of what PhD level work means? Like, can you try and interpret? Because I don't know necessarily what that means when I hear that in an AI to compare. Like, I know elementary school. I know high school. PhD, I'm like, are you okay? I don't understand most of that stuff.
Yeah, I don't understand. I don't think that makes
sense. That's what we learned during a PhD.
In PhD, you are very focused on one topic. So what PhD and what? You know what I mean when they say?
Hence Ashley. So when someone comes in, like, do you have PhD students come in for help?
Graduate students, depending on the semester over the 10 years I've been with the Writing Center, can account for as much as 50% of our clientele.
Wow.
Of that, doc students, so doctoral level students working on a PhD and EdD, whatever variation of acronyms we've got going on at that sort of terminal degree stage. So yeah, I would arguably, I would know what that sort of level work constitutes.
So, first, thank you for pointing that out, because I do think a lot of students have this fear of, if I go to the Writing Center, I'm not doing the work that I should be, or I'm not smart, or whatever.
Yeah, I know how to write. What are you talking about?
Go to Ashley, help me out so many times. So don't feel bad. I mean,
and it's lovely. I am very good at trivia night now because of my job.
I didn't even think of that. You're your own AI, which is basically human and using your own intelligence. Okay. All right. I'm done for this time. You all take it over.
Whenever you go, let me know so I don't show up.
My staff did win Fatty's Trivia Night a semester or two ago. I don't remember which term.
Oh. I'm very proud of that. Yeah. Good job.
I like going to trivia. I don't know anything about it because I didn't grow up here. And they ask about baseball.
It's all over at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. American football, maybe. Baseball, not so much.
Yeah.
I'm from Wisconsin, though, so you have to bleed cheese in Wisconsin.
Yeah. You can't survive without doing that. Okay.
Yeah.
I do have a couple of things based on what Ashley shared. And first of all, thank you so much for joining us and be the first one live with us. It means a lot. I also big fan of your work, and I have to say that with AI, okay, let's put the question in a different way. I'm not from the United States. English is not my native language, and for me, writing in English is probably more difficult than majority of the people that come to the Writing Center. And I think the biggest thing for me is like a white page, and that's where like I have my thoughts. I know what I wanted to say. But just writing, start writing, it's so intimidating. And at times I feel like, discouraged. And then I don't do it because it's like 2 hours is gone. That's my allocated time. And I have to move on and do other things. And at least with AI, now I can kind of share with AI what I'm trying to say, in what structure I'm trying to say. As you said, prompted is a skill and requires writing, but it's not the same of starting an academic paper, like in my case, or an essay for a class, right? So what I'm trying to go with this is, in my opinion, based on my experience, is a great companion for starting up or like drafting something or even get feedback on what I wrote at that point. But any single time I get closer to the completion, I feel like it's pretty useless, and that's where I need to go to the Writing Center and amazing people like you and say, hey, what do you really think? Just because it's like the cohesive element of an entire paper or and the understanding that they get, I don't think is human level or expert human level like you. So I wanted to kind of get your perspective on this and if my observation is quite accurate or not.
Yes. Is the short answer. Some of the details along that. So talking about the writing process and the part of that you talk about struggling with, which is that horrible white page, right?
Yes.
the AI giving you something to demystify that and get going is essentially a conversation that would allow you to, through the prompt engineering that you're going to be doing, you are still going over the topic and the content. And for me right now, personally, I'm treating that a little bit like brainstorming. It's just you have a tool that can reflect it back to you more interactively than anything besides another human being could. So, for instance, my space upstairs, we've got whiteboard tables. So if you come to appointment in person, we scribble on them quite frequently if you're in that early stage. And that very often is kind of good middle ground to demystifying and getting us going. But I will also agree with you, AI, again, good at sort of big picture things, a bit like Wikipedia, you'd have a good entry level. But I often find that when you start pushing it to do details, you have to be so incredibly precise with your prompt in order to get it to do exactly what you want. You're doing a cost-benefit analysis about whether or not you can do it more efficiently yourself versus whether or not continuing to use the AI at that point would be worthwhile. I was speaking with someone yesterday. I did a presentation with Career Services, and we were talking to one of the people after the presentation, and they said that they are starting to hear chatter about a lot of adult learners. So people who have actually been around in careers longer, out in whatever business or discipline they might be in, who are doing better with AI because they have greater writing control over the prompting piece and how they are telling it explicitly. They will draft 3 pages of what they want it to do, but time spent putting together the right 3 pages will get them that accurate product that someone else who's just spitting out, write me a 5-page essay on X, might struggle with for hours.
Yeah. And the other question I have is related to this is, I don't know if you noticed this, but especially in the IS discipline, they start to ask you about, did you use AI to write this review? Did you use AI to do that? And I've seen people arguing, like, for example, Grammarly has been around for a while and helped people. And some schools have access to awesome resources and copy editors, and other schools don't have access to that. So in my mind, it's like asking if you receive any help during the writing process. And at any point in time, everybody receives some type of help. And so is that a legit question, or is that a legit point? And the other step is, should we start citing or even logging how much we use it to that, what level that we're using before somebody starts saying, hey, you know, you should cite AI, or you should put among your co-author? Or is that like craziness, like talking crazy?
No, there's like 3 layers there that I'm not going to remember all of which.
No,
so much.
So for the first part of it, if you guys have had David on, correct?
And he
AI. Okay, yeah, so yeah. David's presentations are wonderful. If you haven't listened, go back and listen to his presentation. It's fantastic. So the premise that AI is auto-generating new writing is technically false, because it's an algorithm that is trained to recognize words in a particular order, and it's playing off of probabilities about what word should come next. So his classic phrase is twinkle, twinkle, little, blank. And based on cultural knowledge, depending on where you grew up, most of us will know what word is likely to go in that spot. And so that's all an AI is usually doing. And it is then determined based off of what data set it's been trained on. And so, for instance, when I'm talking about plagiarism, so we'll come back to the how to use AI and how to cite it piece.
Yeah.
But if I read through something that's written by AI, I can generally tell, because I'll start to find not full sentences lifted like I might in a plagiarism case, but very strange phrases that are sort of isolated. And if I Google the correct combination of words to find that phrase, I will eventually find it. Think about not so much academic pieces, but think about the internet a little bit like a streaming service where you can find the same thing in multiple places.
Mm-hmm.
About how you find the same article on like 16 different sites verbatim. Sometimes it's appropriately cited, sometimes it's not. But AI isn't recognizing that as the same text. It's saying, this is 16 instances of us talking about this topic in this particular way. And so it does have the potential to skew the data set. And I see that in some of the language that it writes, particularly those students who haven't worked with the results that AI has generated for them very heavily. So if it's just raw AI content, it's more likely, yes, to be grammatically correct, but some of it's not going to be phrased particularly well. I do need to keep the plagiarism piece before we move on. That's important. You were asking about when to say when you've used it. And in the academic circle, so what's relevant for our purposes here, what I said earlier about NIU, and you need to disclose it to your instructors if they've asked you how you used it or not. That's one of the things that will get you brought up into a lovely student of conduct, academic misconduct conversation. So you need to make sure you're talking to your faculty about what's permissible. In professional circles, some of the reasons they're asking is we don't have a lot of sort of legal background yet for determining if this is really based off of the internet, if it is skewing towards someone's language, a little bit like virtual images of an actor who has rights or property or ownership to that language. And so I'm seeing some websites putting up, please don't use your AI to train this. Oh. Academically, a lot of journals, so publications, houses that are controlling those types of things have started to put in requests, treat it a little bit like you would any other research tool. So if you use it to write content, treat it like a quote and you'd put quotation marks around it. So APA users, for instance, which I know you use in College of Business generally, they would want you to cite it like a research tool in your methodology. You would explain where and how you used it as part of your research process. And then you would, if any language came from it verbatim in the text, you would direct quote. And then you cite the whatever version or model you're using in your reference list.
I think the other layer I put in there was about kind of like the parallel where you have university, they have a lot of resources, but you like writing centers or like copy editors, and nobody ever asks you, was it copyrighted by whom or how many pieces were copyrighted? And I never seen acknowledgement of copywriters, copy editors, right? I never heard it. I never seen it. But it's the same thing, but it was never asked to us. And now with AI, it's like, you need to disclose it. You need to kind of like tell us where did you use it there, where not. But is it the same? To me, yes. To me, it's changing my writing. It's not what I wrote. Sometimes some of the sentences are completely restructured by actually magic. It's not really like how I put it, right?
But Grammarly doesn't write. AI writes.
No, I'm talking about copy like human.
Writes a little bit. I've never used it. I shouldn't say.
You should use it.
No, my grammar is perfect. I don't need writing help.
None of us do, which is why my job is obsolete.
Yeah.
That was sarcasm there. So the copy editor piece. So for instance, that's an acknowledged, anyone who's publishing generally knows, and a copy editor was paid for that. So we're not paid to be listed as co-author.
Right.
What we do is a very specific surface that's isolated to that particular part of the process that everyone knows about. The same sort of thing, like the reviewers are never named in the journal, but we all know they exist.
Sometimes they do.
So
I see reviewer. That's what I'm saying. I never seen copy the editors, but I know people, they use it multiple times during the round before it gets to the journal copy editor. So the journal copy editors, I 100% agree, it's like part of the process, but the individual copy editors, that some school have more access to all the other rounds and some others don't, or some others don't even think about it. Isn't that what sometimes we use AI for? And how is that difference? I'm not sure. If you start from scratch and say, hey, like write me a paper about this topic, 100% agree. But if it's only about getting feedback or how you structure a specific sentence, which for somebody is not first native speaker, is the number one thing I'm concerned as I go to my Italian way of structuring most of the time. Yeah, I don't see the difference.
And I am hearing a lot out of international or non-native English speaker populations about that type of usage. And that I think is lovely because you don't always have access to our services. We're not awake 24/7.
We don't want to bother you. We'll be popular.
No. Trees are healthy.
Yes.
And so in that respect, but you're not, again, it's just even the way you described it, you're not talking about putting the entire thing in and having it write it. So you're already acknowledging that it is a particular portion of the process or a very specific thing that you're turning it to it for, not wholesale doing the entire thing. In writing and communication, we have this debate between process and product. Whether or not you are just producing a product and that is the end goal, or whether or not it is the process of creating that thing that is part of what is important. And in higher education, usually when they task you with writing, it is process rather than product. Although not a lot of students will view it that way. They're just like, I have to write 10 pages. That's all I need to know. Get the final thing done. But if I ask a student to study for like 6 hours, no one loves me well enough to study for 6 hours. Not even if they really like the topic. But if I tell them they have to write a 15-page paper, I'm going to get them to think about something for 6 hours.
Yeah.
And that time spent dwelling on it and then explaining things like, in your field, how are you going to make a decision that is different from another professional? And you're both technically right, but you'll have that sort of professional disagreement about the nuances of how you go about doing something. AIs, unless you again spend time training it, not going to do that. It's kind of going to treat it like there's a right or a wrong answer. So to do the Grammarly example, my favorite thing to plug into Grammarly is this really awful sentence. I defiantly paddle the environment and vacuum it all a pigeon. Which is the most nonsensical of things. So
the Jabberwocky over here.
The new version of AI will get, or Grammarly will give you a sort of score or evaluation out of 0 to 100. Someone want to guess what score I got on that sentence?
75.
Between 100 and 75, it was 95.
Yeah.
Oh my.
I deliberately put a typo in there. And so it's like, you need to fix that typo.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Not a sentence.
I'm gaming the AI. Grammarly in particular, their AI is evolving, but historically, that's one of the things that they're weak at. They're not actually reading your sentences. They're just making sure you've got all of your nouns and your verbs in the right spot, which is why what I just created will get such a high score. And if you apply an AI, the Grammarly AI, to that sentence I just talked about, it will start making up content. It sort of vaguely recognizes that it's nonsensical, but it does not take the initiative to reach out and ask me questions about, okay, tell me a little bit more, the way you would from a human engager. It will just start creating things, and it picks up the words paddle, environment, and pidget, and seems to think that I'm an environmentalist. And so if I do 3 or 4 of the Grammarly AI pushes to get it to make it sound more professional and then more academic, by the end, what I end up getting is something a little bit more technical, but I'm an environmentalist now. And that's perhaps I had no control over the direction it went. I could be wanting to talk about, I don't know.
Well, you could be a creative writer. Like I reference things like Cinderella and all of these weird things that are a whole large part of our culture that we all know, but probably Grammarly would say that's incorrect. And we're like, no, I want it. I want that. Okay.
But I think one important point on this is what you were asking before, like PhD level stuff. And I think they want to charge 20K a month for that.
I don't have it.
Yeah. I wasn't asking you to buy it for me, but the same thing with the reasoning models is like they are selling it is they can replace or make your profession obsolete. But I don't think so. I think it's can be detrimental because if people like start to rely on them and not develop those skills to at least pick it up the way that you should put the things in a flow that makes sense. I'm not talking about the grammar. Again, it's super useful for me and without it, I'll probably be doomed. But I'm talking about how you even approach it and structure it. And if you don't spend the time doing it, is the same thing of coding. People say, why do I need to learn code if you can write the code much faster than me? It's like, you don't have the foundation. You have no idea what he's doing wrong, if he's doing it wrong, and what is the value you added to the world, to the company.
You know why I don't use AI for writing or coding? I don't like to lose control.
That's more of a personal problem to me.
I know, but my question related to that and what they had discussed before, like especially the part that you said, the wording might be similar to someone somewhere. It's not exactly verbatim. My question is about writing style. Mm-hmm. So what is happening, and it's happening a lot, is people are using the AI to tackle the white page. And then I think it has an influence in writing style. And I don't know, I'm curious if you have noticed if AI has a writing style, because people do, I've heard. And if you know someone, if you have corresponded with them enough, you would know their writing style.
Yeah.
Right? And if we are writing less and less, what's going to happen to writing style? It changes over time. Even there are companies now training new models based on existing models' output.
Mm-hmm.
So what is going to, so that creates some compounding error, we call, if you use one model's output to train another model, that creates error that grows. So what is going to happen? What is the impact on our future writing style? What is writing? How's writing going to change? Are people actually going to develop writing style? I don't know.
It depends on how you define style. Mm. The internet had a pretty significant effect on writing style. Mm-hmm. So long view, some of the stuff, I don't know if I mentioned it in my background, but I did medieval literature originally. Mm-hmm. When I was thinking education, I was going to be a medieval scholar. It didn't happen. No one wants to do a medieval class now, much less grammar, but entirely different problem. But it does mean I tend to have a long view of things. So a little bit after my time period, they had the invention of the printing press. Mm-hmm. Before then, everyone had been handwriting things. And so talk about a sort of an economy shift in terms of everyone losing their jobs. Yeah. When we talk about something like style, you will similarly notice, like, the things I would look at would be things like syntax. So what types of sentences are you writing? If you do statistical analysis of my writing, for instance, I'm very fond of subordinate conjunctions. I like starting a sentence with, since this is the case, comma, this is the result. I do a lot of them. So that would be one way you could mark out writing. Word choice typically is another thing that informs style. The order in which you mention ideas, whether you're inductive or deductive, the length of paragraphs that you write. So for instance, we see that across campus in the difference in how you write in philosophy versus how you write in business. We have stylistic differences in things like that would be what I would point out. So documentation styles would inform some of that. But we've seen it across time periods as well. A lot of writing in the 70s and 80s, you were finding massive paragraphs because it was very theoretical and we were delving deeply into ideas. And a little bit with the age of the internet, if you think about how long paragraphs are on the internet, they're not as long. And we see it in things like business writing now, which our paragraphs are generally a little bit shorter and much more focused. So they read a little bit like bullet points. So you can scan through and you're looking for a good first sentence that would have key words that would let someone's brain land on it for like 5 seconds so they can figure out this paragraph is about this. And if I don't want to read it, I'd just move on.
The too long didn't read.
So some disciplines are going to privilege writing that is very much like that very specific focused piece. So we were already seeing that in writing. AI is very likely going to have a similar effect. I think we're too early in it. AI itself, its writing has changed. Using the medieval example, English writing, we tend to still do long paragraphs. We're wordy people. In 2021, so I've been testing out the same sort of prompts on AI every semester when I'm doing my AI presentations. And so I've seen the consistent evolution of how it functions. The first couple of times I asked AI write a 300-word mini essay on this medieval topic, it read like a business paper. They were short, blocky paragraphs. It had a very clear cut. Thank you.
It is totally our fault. You know, in Iowa, I was a graduate student. I went to writing center and they told me to write like that.
Yes. It depends on
the I was taught to write.
No, you were trained that way, but you didn't get an English major, yes?
No.
So you didn't need to write like that. And that's partially my point. AI didn't nearly recognize that I was writing on an English topic, and so it didn't adopt a style that is more acceptable or used commonly in that discipline. So I'm not talking about individual styles here. I'm mostly talking about some of the other variables that would inform it. But AI does tend to make things universal. Last hiring cycle, so last spring, when I was accepting applications for graduate assistantships to work at the Writing Center, we require a writing sample. Imagine that Writing Center wants to know your writing work. And I could very clearly tell which ones were written by AI, at least the ones who had just done the produce a sample for me and not done any more work with it, because they all used variations of the same topic. And a decent number of the sentences, again, not verbatim, but they were close enough in terms of they all used the word align, for instance, all of them across the board. I'm now predisposed not to like the word in an application just because I saw so many of them. Yeah. So you are talking about style disappearing. And if you don't engage with the AI and have some control over it, yes, that is a real possibility.
You know, there was a conversation early on, can we have detectors of AI? We can't develop automatic detectors of AI because of technical feasibility. But I was saying that style, you can detect the style and you are detecting style. It's very possible.
There's an entire sort of subset of criminology that just looks at writing style. It's part of profiling, I think. Yeah. But we do have AI detectors. They do exist.
How do they work?
Not particularly well.
Yes.
I
have always said that, I don't want to say controversial things here, but I have always said they are scam.
the great way, all students listening, it's great to say, I don't want to say anything controversial, and then say exactly what you want to.
They're all scared.
Well, because it's so difficult. So to be fair, we're setting them up for failure.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not particularly... None of them. So one of those essays that AI wrote for me, ChatGPT is the example I was using. I plugged it into ZeroGPT, so that's their AI detector, mm-hmm. and it told me it was 100% human. But I've also plugged something that was 100% human, and they said this is 100% AI. And so talking about non-native English speakers, AI detectors in particular, that's one of the things they tend to flag sort of early writers, so people whose writing skill set is still being developed, it tends to identify and isolate non-native English speakers. So it sort of isolates and targets populations and sort of false flags on them more than others. We have the same problems with plagiarism checkers, though, too. So it's a similar system, same issues.
Yeah. Number of false positive and false negative.
It makes it useless.
Yeah.
Speaking of the... what you were saying earlier and what you just brought up, the people, non-native speakers.
Mm-hmm.
So my field overlaps quite a bit with engineering, and no offense to engineering colleagues, they don't write well. You think business school doesn't write well. and I have seen significant improvements since 2023 when I review. Significant improvement. And I think people, it is helping people, and it's made papers better. It's and that just makes everything better because their ideas are communicated better. So I'm not against it. You might sound like I am.
No, I want to point out we had a guest on the show, Jalal, that founded a company, Writing Check, that is built to help people that are non-native speakers to pass exam like TOEFL or IELTS and stuff like that. So it's definitely
to prepare them. Yeah,
to prepare them. Yes. To prepare them to get them feedback and stuff like that. So it's definitely. Again,
helps English.
That's why I call it a companion, a tool. It's always there. You don't have to bother actually 24/7 to get some feedback on what you're writing, the way you're writing it. But I think the message that we need to send across the board, and I think David did a good job in kind of like, he's writing 5 hours a day, the morning every day.
Mm-hmm.
The more you write, the better you get it.
I still think about that.
Yeah.
There is someone that writes 5 hours a day.
I think
about that all the time.
And he gets better at it by just doing it. And the more lazy you are, I think, because you always start with ChatGPT or you just tell ChatGPT to write everything that you do, I think you're going to lose those skills even more. So if we are not good, I think you're going to get worse if you don't take it a lesson learned. I still remember my advisor, every time I was submitting for a conference, I was providing the paper to him. And he was getting me feedback, like pretty much what you're doing. But his feedback was more like, I'll go through 2 pages. This is what you need to fix throughout the entire paper. And then I was going the second time, so he was getting to 5 pages and so on and so forth. But all those notes and feedback, it was so fundamental in me getting slightly better. I hope you consider slightly better for sure what I was back
in the
days. Okay. Yeah. Is slightly better than that. And without that feedback and without me keep trying to do it because AI wasn't there at that point, I think I will still write Italian English and not business.
I like it.
Style. Yeah, but they're not going to be published. So I can write for you a poem, but it's not going to count for my tenure. So, but yeah, I mean, joke aside, I think that's kind of like how I feel about AI in general. I'm not sure if that's kind of like how you feel or what you will say to our student when it comes to using it or using the writing center.
With writing, I don't know where. I don't particularly like the stereotype. I'll first describe writing like Tetris. So the game of Tetris is not a winnable game. You do not play to win. You just have particularly good reflexes at that moment and you get to the stage when it surpasses your current capacity. Writing is all that is. Writing is not a thing where there's a finite done time. The sort of adage in writing centers is writing is never finished, it's just due. Because technically speaking, it's pretty subjective in some cases. We can look at technically, yes, you need a comma there, but a lot of the stuff that informs the content and where you put it and how you outline it is so personal. That's where the stylistics come in. And so the Tetris piece, where it's going and how it's sort of going to currently function in the future, that we can't say, except you do need to know enough about it to be able to control it, because AI won't always do that for you.
Also, I think because of technology, we are actually writing more. We are writing a lot more. We are texting all the time. I had a colleague, yeah. And he was researching, he was in English. I feel embarrassed not remembering his name. But he was saying that he researched like the new writing platforms that people that has made people technology that has made people write that they wouldn't before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little hopeful. People are writing more anyway, even though we have the AI to write for us.
Yeah, I mean, that's a secondary conversation. I get students routinely telling me that they have anxiety about coming to talk to someone in person. Oh, they would much rather do a virtual appointment with my staff. Virtual account is, at the moment, for this academic year, about 65% of our appointments.
Wow.
At the Writing Center are virtual.
That's concerning.
And sometimes even when they're in their dorm rooms. Sometimes it's Illinois doing its thing with the weather, so it's perfectly reasonable. But sometimes it's just the anxiety or the stress of engaging with a human, because we're used to doing it through the vehicle of social media.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, there is a lot more writing going on, but each of those has its own sort of conventions for what writing is acceptable. Yeah. Like in sort of social media, you can send TY, the letters TY, to someone, mm-hmm. and it's no problem. The first introduction I got to the letters TY was when I was in that retail job. And I was doing TY this year's numbers as opposed to LY last year's numbers.
Oh.
And so I had to Google it the very first time when a colleague sent me the letters TY through a Teams chat. And I'm like, what do they mean this year? What did I miss? And I Googled it. But I'm the geeky wordsmith who's going to Google it. And not everyone's going to.
It's like Urban Dictionary, Apple Googling, or where do you find those pronunciations?
You can find it.
Well, now we have the AI on Google to tell us.
People are saying that in person to me now, and I just walk away.
My mother keeps threatening to get me one of those shirts that says, I'm silently correcting your grammar.
Are you? What?
No, because spoken English is different than written English. There's different rules.
And it's actually when he was asking that question, I felt the same. I think that the fact that people are now typing text way more, I feel they feel the embarrassment of even students in the same class, right? If I tell them do a team work, they do not speak to each other. They rather probably message stuff in Teams, right? And complete the task rather than chat. And I was like, you are in the same room. And the way I was like raised and my education is all about oral exams and stuff like that. So it's like, you either talk or... yeah, you are in trouble. And now it's more like, I probably can do without it, but still is an important skill when it comes to networking or like in-person events and stuff like that, because that's going to set you apart. And it's surprising, as it should be the number one thing the human can do very well is speak to each other, right? Rather than write to each other.
The career services presentation, and I'm getting this chatter too from my sort of company and outside of higher ed collaborators, is that communication is the number one softer power or competency that we're looking for out of people coming into the job market. You're going to have the skill set maybe to get hired into an entry level job, but if you don't have those accompanying skills like communication to be able to engage, they're not going to move you up the ladder. And so you'll stagnate in a particular position if you don't have the accompanying skills that would level you up into those positions. And that's one of the threats we have with communication, whether that's in person and being able to sit down and talk to somebody, whether that's being able to communicate with them professionally via an email or using AI to craft effective communications.
Ashley, I am continually blown away by this conversation, and I'm very grateful for your time. But before we end, I have two... I think simple questions.
Uh-oh.
Whenever I say that, they're never, I realize
like
that.
Like DeAngelo style question.
Exactly. Do you have a grammatical error that is like on the top of your list, like a pet peeve that you're like, can, like just the one that you're like, that annoys me as a person? Because like I do. I have one that like.
Me too.
If you don't, because you're a wonderful educator and you want to welcome everyone and know, I totally, you could say everything is perfectly fine and I have none of those. And then do you have a favorite writer, like someone that you like to read?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so for the first one, I do. Which, to be fair, I'm going to be teaching at the exact opposite of what I prefer when I finish my career, because it's in flux, I believe. But if we talk about people, it should be saying people who do these things rather than people that do these things. I'm finding it slipping more and more into writing that people aren't using the personal pronoun or the reflexive pronoun who, they're using that.
Interesting.
Which, if you're talking about a human being, I would like it to sound like it's still a human being and we're not dehumanizing them. So I like the word who versus that.
I'm going to, yeah, exactly. I don't know. Yeah, I know. I'm like, dang, all right.
You probably do that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to think if I saw one in your last manuscript. There might have been one, but it was a one-off. Very often, I think it was on, it was an AI-ish topic, right? Yeah. So it would make perfect sense that you were thinking about things that way.
I'm not the person that does that.
That was a great grammar joke there. I mean, I'm grateful for that.
A good pun is a thing of beauty.
It is. It truly is.
In terms of favorite writer, that is one where I tend not to want to pick because a little bit like music on any given day, I want something different. And so from my medieval time period, it's usually the Pearl poet. If we're talking Renaissance, it's generally Shakespeare. But these days, I could be reading anything. And that includes stuff online or AI written content. It's not that I'm demonizing or looking at any of it as bad. It has appropriate contexts. And when I have that particular context in mind, that's what I want.
I think a similar question is, which one would you recommend to somebody that's struggling to write well? There's a few of them. I know it's still tricky, but
Did David talk about where he thinks AI is going in terms of fees? But he calls it the drug dealer model, which is a very nice apt metaphor, which is now that we've all had the hit of free AI, they're going to start charging fees. And a little bit like we slip in our streaming services or whatever other things we pay for regularly, I'm not sure what sort of rates they're going to start charging us. So I hesitate to say a particular one because I think that's not that far off. And I want to make sure it's not just the best service, but that it's balancing things like economics and budgets that students might encounter. My suspicion is that companies will generally buy into one, especially if they're going to design it in-house so that there will be intellectual property coverage and it's not opening up things. So looking at the job market, it's usually whatever your organization is going to use, which will allow you to settle into its particular flaws. Like PaperPal, not great at plagiarism. Not great at plagiarism. ChatGPT, generally good in the overall usage, but I agree it's probably good for sort of brainstorming pieces. The Grammarly one, I still think Grammarly is a really good like spell checker. Its AI is probably the one I'm the least confident in, but I do also know that's the one students tend to like the most. So
Min needs to use it.
What, me?
Yeah, because you never use it.
There are nothing wrong with my grammar.
Sure.
Ashley, thank you so much for your perspective and your time. I have learned so much, and I'm just continually amazed by the fact that people like you are doing this work and helping us guide these conversations, because I think they're very important. And without someone with an expertise in it, I think we can head down the wrong road really quickly. So thank you so much for sharing your insight.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me. Anytime. This evolves so fast, we'll probably have a different conversation in a year anyway.
Yes. I look forward to that.
You're welcome anytime.
Yes.
And thank you for listening to another episode of The Gateway, brought to you by Northern Illinois University, where your future is our focus. And please, remember to love always the promise of tomorrow today.